Country Hour with Evan Wallace on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Good afternoon. It is great to have your company across Tasmania or further afield on the ABC Listen app. Have you, a loved one or a friend, been affected by melanoma? Last year, over 18,000 Australians were diagnosed with the skin cancer. Here in Tasmania, it's the third most common cancer in women and the fourth most common in men, with melanoma claiming the lives of 30 to 50 Tasmanians a year. This afternoon, we're looking at the risk melanoma plays in Tassie rural communities.
Cover up, for God's sake, you know, because once you get cancer, you can't undo it. You have got it then. And you never know when it's going to come back.
Also, from all reports, it's been a great season for Tasmanian lavender farms. You'll meet one farmer who has ventured into the world of mechanised harvesting.
There's only two main manufacturers in the world that manufacture harvesters, and they're both based out of Europe, so it's quite expensive to bring in. There's currently only one of those in the state at the moment.
It's Tuesday, and this is the Tasmanian Country Hour.
Help your child learn to read in just 15 minutes a day with the award-winning ABC Reading Eggs. There's one-on-one lessons, fun games, and exciting rewards based on scientific research and developed by Australian educators. Start your free 30-day trial now and get a free rewards sticker book to help your child track their progress. ABC Reading Eggs makes learning to read fun. Find out more at readingeggs.com.au/ABC.
It accounts for only 2% of skin cancers, but it's responsible for 75% of skin cancer deaths. I'm talking about melanoma, and it's estimated 1 in 17 people will be diagnosed with the cancer by the time they're 85. While melanoma is generally curable if detected and treated early, there is only a 5% chance of survival over 5 years for someone diagnosed at stage 4. And it's not good news in Tassie, with Tasmanians facing the second highest risk of developing melanoma after Queenslanders. Given these numbers, I want to know, have you been diagnosed with melanoma? Or perhaps a loved one or someone you know? This afternoon, I'm inviting you to share your experiences of the cancer. How has it affected your world? You can share with me your stories and your experiences on 0437 922 936. Maybe you've faced a significant delay getting a diagnosis after detecting a new mole or spot. Potentially you've had a cancer scare and you've ramped up your sun protection strategy. Slipping, slopping, slapping, seeking and sliding. Tell me, that number again is 0437 922 936. We're having this conversation as this year melanoma and skin cancers will be in the spotlight after Professors Georgina Long, who originally hails from Tasmania, and Richard Scollier were named Joint Australians of the Year for their melanoma treatment breakthroughs. The professors are co-directors of the Melanoma Institute of Australia, and they've been credited with saving thousands of lives since they developed an immunotherapy approach to treating melanoma. Here's some of what they had to say as they were named Joint Australians of the Year.
We stand here tonight proudly representing every melanoma patient and their families, but also those with brain cancer and indeed all cancers.
Our thoughts are always with those families where our breakthrough treatments came too late. We are forever indebted to your loved ones and all our patients for their selfless commitment to research, which has changed the futures for others. That is Aussie mateship at its very best.
Sadly, everyone knows someone with melanoma. It's as Aussie as our golden beaches and our sweeping plains. We're the melanoma gold medalists, but this is not a gold medal to be proud of. In most cases, melanoma is preventable with sun-safe behaviour, and prevention is always better than a cure.
A tan is skin cells in trauma from overexposure to UV radiation from the sun. There is nothing healthy about a tan, nothing. Our bronzed Aussie culture is actually killing us.
We must elevate sun safety to equal status with other life-saving safety measures like wearing a seatbelt or a helmet.
We can love this sunburnt country without the sunburn. Our mission is zero deaths from melanoma. To reach it, in addition to prevention, we need a targeted screening program and greater investment in research. This must be a national health priority.
Australians of the Year, Richard Scolia and Georgina Long. Sun safety, well, something that everyone needs to be on the lookout, but especially individuals who work outside and have a higher risk of sun exposure. And on today's Country Hour, I'm inviting you to share with me your encounters with melanoma, from diagnosis to protection to its impact. Share with me your encounters on 0437 922 936. I've heard that in some cases it can take up to a year to see a specialist to get the diagnosis that you need. From a national perspective, reporter Fiona Broom asked Professor Sue Brumby, a researcher at the National Centre for Pharma Health, how much of an issue melanoma is for farmers and rural communities.
We often find farmers with basal cell carcinomas and squamous cell carcinomas, and often, you know, around on their ears and hands and face and the creases of their noses. And they are usually a bit aware of them, but, you know, they just sort of start out as a scratchy, itchy spot. And then ideally we can get them in to be properly assessed for those.
So we have been talking about sun safety for, I guess, the past few decades. How much is that message getting through to agricultural communities?
If you look today at the slip, slop, slap, seek slide, it is more focused on beach and being outside and having fun as opposed to workers and people whose vocations put them out in the outside extremities and of the UV environment. So I think the message went through in terms of probably long sleeves, but we still find many farmers wearing the cap hat as opposed to a bucket hat or a broad brim hat. We also find that farming people they actually tend to use sunscreen when they're on holidays at the beach, but not so much in everyday work, partly because it gets sticky and greasy and attracts dust. So I think there's still a bit more to do in terms of getting them to really, if they're not going to wear sunscreen, to actually make sure they're wearing clothing that is UV protective.
And what about age groups or genders?
We certainly see everybody with skin spots and skin cancers that they're concerned about. The older generation, you know, people sort of over 50 often have the scalier hands, and we're seeing more spots coming out on their ears and face and rest of their body. But that is primarily also, I think, due to age. They may have been severely burnt earlier in their life, which leaves you a bit more predisposed to getting skin cancers later in life.
And when you see people coming into those sort of pop-up screening centres, what kind of reaction are you getting from people? Is it something that is kind of top of mind for them? Are they really thinking about going and getting their checks, or is it something that they perhaps aren't thinking about day to day?
Yeah, good question. I think they go past and it props their mind, or we also offer, you know, sort of blood pressure and lipid assessment and a full kind of assessment, of which skin is just a small part of that. So the curiosity is they may be worried about their blood pressure, or they may have had a family member that's just been diagnosed with diabetes or had a heart attack or something. So they're curious, or indeed just had someone diagnosed with a skin cancer. So it's a variety of things that make them want to actually come and engage. But farmers and farmer health, they're often busy, so they really appreciate the opportunity when they're off the farm just to go and get some other advice.
Professor Long and Professor Scolia had a clear message last week. They say that there needs to be a targeted screening program and better community outreach, as well as more research in the fields of melanoma and skin cancers. What's your key message to farming communities and to agricultural workers?
Certainly to get your skin checked at least annually. If you've had a skin cancer, you should be getting checked more regularly, and also making sure you or your partner or a family member is also checking those hard to reach spots that you can't see yourself. And if you have any change in a spot or gets itchy or just something happens, make sure you go and get that checked. And obviously early detection really matters. I think Professor Scolia and Professor Long's comments about treating skin cancer and UV exposure a bit like tobacco and warnings and all those things is an important thing. We certainly have a lot of skin cancers in Australia, and we know that we can do a lot ourselves to prevent them.
And what's the best way to get something checked if you do have concerns? Should you pop into your GP or call one of the telehealth services?
I haven't used a telehealth service for skin check, but they do have great, you know, dermoscopes, and you can send images around and have them checked out. So I would probably go back to the traditional model, but of seeing a GP, or certainly if you're at any of these field day events that are available in rural Victoria at agricultural shows and things, to actually take the opportunity to use that. They're people that see a lot of these things. They're used to working with farm men and women and farming communities, and can get you checked out quickly.
That's Professor Sue Brumby from the National Centre for Farmer Health, speaking with Fiona Broom.
Evenings with Helen Shield.
Laima Jansone, she is a virtuoso on this Latvian instrument.
The kuokla is a plucked string instrument. It's also the instrument of the soul.
At what point did you decide you needed to take it on a multi-day bushwalk?
I think it was Anita's idea. It will be so beautiful there. And I said yes, because I didn't know what does it mean, this bushwalk.
Helen Shield.
Coast to coast.
Monday to Thursday from 7 on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
On air, on the ABC Listen app, online and on digital radio. This is the Country Hour with Evan Wallace from ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Great to have your company this Tuesday afternoon, where it is 17 minutes past 12. We are putting the spotlight on melanoma today. How has it affected your world, your life, your experience? Having this conversation because we know this year's joint winners of Australian of the Year Award, well, they are awarded because of their incredible research into melanoma prevention and their use of immunotherapy response as a way of being able to treat individuals who are diagnosed with melanoma. For bringing to you a story that's been put together by Lucy McDonald, thought it might be time to check out the weather. In Burnie, it is 20 right now. In Devonport, it is also sitting on 20. Here in Launceston, it's a lovely day in Lonnie. We are on 21. At Hobart right now, you're sitting on 22. St. Helens, 21. And Strawn, you are on 17. Great to have your company. Evan Wallace is my name. And you're welcome to share with me your experiences and your encounters with melanoma on 0438 922 936. That number is 0438 922 936. Maybe you've encountered significant delays when it comes to getting the diagnosis that you need, or when it comes to just getting basic screening. Maybe someone in your life or you yourself has been affected by melanoma, and it's changed how you approach sun protection and what advice you give to other people. Well, farmers may not seem like the most obvious choice to spruik sun safety, but after a brush with melanoma, two Tasmanian farmers want to spread the word about the importance of sun protection and getting your spots checked. Well, Bernard Atkins and Neil Van Roy have different stories. They both say their experience with cancer has changed their outlook on life. Lucy McDonald has this story.
When Bernard Atkins picks up the phone, he's just returned from a fishing trip.
The beef farmer, who hails from Stanley on the state's northwest coast, is no stranger to a bit of sun. But these days, he says he's much more careful about covering up.
When we were younger on the farm, we probably didn't wear hats and certainly didn't have sunscreen, you know. And, you know, we were growing crops and you're changing irrigation, you just go to do it. And back then we had, we had one Southern Cross, for the rest were sprinklers and pipes. And so you're just out in the paddock doing stuff like that all the time and generally always on the tractor, I suppose. But, yeah, as time's gone on, and I'm a fishaholic and I'm out in the sea a lot, and, again, we didn't, you know, you didn't put on sunscreen. So one of my mates was having a coffee one day. He said, "Mate, I don't like the look of that, you know, black spot on top of your head." And I said, "Right." He said, "I've just been in the clinic." He'd been in the Navy, and he's already had two or three bits cut out of him. And he said, I'd go and get that checked out." So I got an appointment and off I went. And he checked my head out and he said, "Look, it's a wait and watch. Just, you know, there's not cancer at this stage, but it's not looking real good, but we'll keep an eye on it." And he checked me all over and he said, "What's that on your lip?" And I said, "Well, that's the cold sore that I've had for, you know, 2, maybe going on 3 months. He said, "Oh, I don't like the look of it." Next day I was on the farm and I got a phone call. He said, "Well, I've got some bad news for you. Not only have you got a cancer in your lip, but it's very aggressive and we've got to get it out within 14 days. Okay. So I had it out exactly within the 14 days. So the head was sort of put back on the back burner, but when I went for my 3-month checkup with my lip, the specialist of the day said, "Yep, no, very happy the way your lip is." "Oh, dearie me," he said, "we better have a look at this head." And I said, "What?" He said, "I think this might have changed a bit, mate." And he said, "I'm going to biopsy that while you're here," which he did. And, yes, it had turned to cancer. That was a bit bigger operation underneath. It was a bit bigger. So I ended up with 40 stitches, which is pretty massive.
Is there enough of a culture, you know, in actually going and getting the health check and things like that? Or do you think that people still like, "Hey, it'll be all right"?
It won't be all right, because I tell you what, it becomes a life and death thing. It all depends on a situation. And that's, you know, what I've been through is I've been pretty lucky. And I haven't made a real big thing of it till we've had a talk today. And at the end of the day, I think it's one of those situations. If you're a farmer out there and you've got something on the that you're not happy with and it changes or something happens, you get it checked out. And you should go and be checked out once a year anyway.
Like Bernard, Northern Dairy farmer Neil Van Roy was a little lax on sun protection. He says if he could go back and change it, he would.
I used to wear shorts and a T-shirt, no hat, no glasses, and now I wear hat and sleeves. And I just wish I'd known when I was young what I know now. You can't undo it, though. What's happened has happened.
Can you tell me, you know, when you found out that you had melanoma?
I went to the doctor and I had a spot on my ear and I was really worried about it. And they said, "Oh, it's nothing. It's just a skin spot." And I went back 6 weeks later and was back again. And then I went back again for the third time. They wouldn't listen to me. In the end, I sort of got a bit annoyed. And I said, "I want a biopsy." And they said, "Oh, you're wasting your time." I said, "It's your time. It's my time. It's my body."
That must be really scary that you went there, you know, for help. You went to the right place and you say that they kept dismissing you. What was that like?
By the time I got to the third time, I was crabby, really, really crabby. I just, because my dad died of skin cancer, so I knew that I possibly could get it.
What was it like when you got the diagnosis?
To be perfectly honest, when someone tells you got cancer, you go, "Oh, geez." And you sort of think, "Am I going to die or am I going to live?" But then I'm a positive person, so I just pretty quickly go, "Right, we've got to beat this. Let's get a plan."
You know, you were obviously very vigilant, like you said, because your father died of skin cancer.
Yep.
So you were insistent on getting this mole checked, but a lot of people wouldn't be. Is that concerning to you that you had to fight so hard to get yours checked when others might then walk away?
Oh, yeah. You know, a lot of people could have been like, "Oh, well, doctors told me that's what it is. Well, sometimes you got to listen to your body. Your body tells you it's just something wrong. And you know your body better than anybody. I don't care what anyone says.
And a big thing with, you know, skin cancer in particular is also prevention, which obviously it was too late for you in that case. But what would you say to others, you know, other builders, farmers, et cetera, who are in the sun all the time?
Cover up, for God's sake, you know, because once you get cancer, you can't undo it. You have got it then. And you never know when it's going to come back. You know, it could come back in 1 year, 5 years, 10 years. It might not come back at all, but we only get one go at life, don't we? So, you know, put some sunscreen on, you know, put a hat on, or get out of the really bad hot sun.
And if you've already got the spot, go get it checked.
Get it checked, yes. My kids and me, we all get checks. We get checks all the time. And, you know, one bloke said to me, oh, yeah, but I've got to go to the doctor and take all my clothes off. I said, big deal. When you go to the hospital and get a treatment, there's a lot more exposed, I promise you.
Neil Van Roy ending that story from Lucy McDonald. News and weather coming up shortly. But Lisa, thank you very much for your text. You said, hi, my friend had a melanoma on her chest. Most women's clothing does not have buttons up to the neck. This is very risky for overexposure to the sun. I buy men's shirts that have top buttons to wear outdoors. Lisa in the Tasman Peninsula, thank you very, very much for your message. And I am interested in hearing how melanoma has shaped your world. Maybe it's a friend who has been affected. Maybe it's you yourself. You can tell me on 0438 922 936. Potentially, it's looking at those sun protection strategies, such as the one that's been shared by Lisa. Maybe it's come to how you've managed to find that diagnosis and access support. 0438 922 936. Evan Wallace is my name. You are listening to the Tasmanian Country Hour. It's great to have your company. Changing tack a little bit here, you've probably seen a silo converted into a farm swimming pool or bar, but have you seen one that's been crafted into a two-story hotel? Well, that's what Ken Edwards and Ruth Ashburner-Gorse have just done. The couple run a farm stay near Pittsworth on the Darling Downs, and they spoke to Brandon Long about the 18-month build.
After their first single-story glamping silo became a hit, the owners of property Fig Tree decided to tackle their most ambitious project yet.
Well, I think it was so popular that really took off. Everybody loved it, so we thought we'd just step it up and make something a little bit better with more facilities in it and creature comforts for people from the city, but still be able to come to the country and enjoy it.
One of the most important parts of the build was using locally sourced materials. With his engineering background and her passion for design, they knew it was achievable.
The worst thing that we can think of is going to the tip, getting rid of things. So it was really important to us to recycle or upcycle existing materials. We wanted it all to blend in because this is a country property. And the lovely thing about pretty much everything in this silo is it's all been sourced locally, from the silo itself through to the big posts that hold it all together.
The old galvanised silo was sourced from Mill Merrin, the ironbark timber poles came from a miller at Cecil Plains, and the spiral staircase originated from Stanthorpe. From the outside, it looks relatively unchanged apart from some window cutouts and a metal veranda. On the inside, it's spread over two levels and features a fireplace, bar, fridge, couch and bathroom. Due to the rocky terrain making underground power cables too expensive and the desire for a low carbon footprint, the silo hotel is completely off-grid, running off solar panels and 12-volt batteries.
It's off-grid. That was important to us. You know, the way forward is obviously people are really trying to, for the climate's sake, get off-grid.
Ken and Ruth now aim to put the final touches on the silo before opening it to the public in just a few months.
There we go. Farm stay owners Ken Edwards and Ruth Ashburner-Gorse. It is approaching 12:30. Ted, thank you very much for sharing your story. You've said, my mother died of melanoma 30-odd years ago, found it in an unlikely place on her. It was diagnosed far too late. For me, working on the orchid 40-plus years, sunshine and sprays, I get regularly checked and regularly have bits cut off. I reckon by the time I cark it, there'll not be much left of me to have a funeral over. Ted, thank you for telling me your experiences and, yes, that vigilance that shapes and affects your life and your world. And you can share with me your stories too on 0438 922 936. I think a few troubles raising our Hobart newsroom, so we might head straight to the Bureau where we have Luke Johnson on the line. Good afternoon to you, Luke.
Good afternoon. How are you going?
I'm going along very well. How is the weather looking across the state?
Well, I mean, sadly not newsworthy either. So it's pretty calm today. Lots of clear skies around Tasmania, partly cloudy conditions across the north coast and parts of the northeast at the moment. Up to 9 a.m, there was a few showers about the west, mostly yesterday, around 3 to 10 millimetres. A couple of showers in the northeast also, with the 4 millimetres being reported near Methina. Nothing significant. Well, nothing really since 9 a.m. today, and we're not expecting anything until late today when we see some showers redevelop about the southwest. Not looking like heaps though, so for the rest of today, essentially fine. Tomorrow, showers about the west during the morning, then the possibility of some light showers about the upper part of the east coast tomorrow afternoon, but otherwise fine. Thursday and Friday, we'll see showers mostly into the west of the state, but it's probably more significantly could be the wind. It's going to be fairly gusty, fairly windy with westerly winds gusting to around 80, 90 kilometres per hour both Thursday and Friday. So it's slightly below our threshold for a severe weather warning for damaging wind, but you'll certainly notice the wind pretty well everywhere in Tasmania unless you're really sheltered from westerlies. Good news is, though, it clears away pretty quickly during Friday afternoon or evening, and it looks like the weekend's going to be back to relatively warm, settled weather. So that's something at least.
And have we hit our expected maximums across the state for today, Luke?
No, not yet. We're slowly getting there, though. The warmest, it's been 24 at Campania and Ouse. Hobart Airport's been up to 23.5. Launceston Airport's been to, and Launceston itself, have been to 23 degrees. So a few more hours of heating potential going on. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if we climb another 3 or 4 degrees about parts of the southeast for the remainder of today.
Very good. Now, you did flag that there's going to be some windy conditions in the days ahead. But today, any warnings in place that we should be aware of?
Not really. Well, I mean, for agriculture, not necessarily, but a strong wind warning, I mean, if you're fishing, strong wind warning for southern coastal waters between Tasman Island and Low Rocky Point. And that area extends to include adjacent areas in the lower east and central west coast tomorrow, and then on Thursday, Friday, we'll start to see things like gale force wind warnings crop in, so really becoming more significant on Thursday and Friday. So if you are headed out on the waters today, generally northwest to southwesterly winds 10 to 20 knots, increasing to 20 to 30 knots about the south from early this afternoon. And tomorrow the winds will be more west to southwesterly in the range of 15 to 25 knots, tending southeast to northeasterly about the east coast during the day and reaching up to 30 knots in the far south in the morning and again in the evening. The swell both today and tomorrow, west to southwesterly, coming onto the west and south in the range of 2.5 to 3.5 metres today, a little bit more tomorrow, reaching up to 4 metres. Through Bass Strait today and tomorrow, westerly to around 1 metre, and the east coast has got a south to southwesterly 1 to 2 metres. And significant wave height on the west coast at the moment is 2.8 metres.
Luke, thank you very much for bringing us up to speed. Appreciate the update.
No worries. Thank you.
There we have it. There is Luke Johnston from the Bureau bringing you the latest, everything that you need to know weather-wise. Evan Wallace is my name. It is 27 minutes to one. Vera, thank you for your text. You've said your skin is an organ. Skin cancer can appear anywhere, even if you cover up as much as you can. I've heard of cancers in places that would not be exposed to the sun. And maybe, Vera, potentially reading into that, you're thinking places that should not be exposed to the sun too. Thank you for that text, and you can message me on 0438 922 936. We have the spotlight this afternoon on melanoma, because this year our joint Australian of the Year winners were recognised and celebrated for their research into cure and treatment of melanoma, but I am keen to get your experiences and your encounters with the skin cancer. How's it shaped your life, your friends' lives, your family's lives? Maybe it's changed how you approach sun protection or getting checked, such as Ted, who goes off to regular checks and has regular bits taken from him, shaped and sparked by tragedy within his family. But text me, 0438 922 936.
Afternoons with Joel Reinberger.
Damien Leith, how on earth are you brave enough to cover Roy Orbison?
Oh, he was incredible. What a voice. Be great to start with. It's over, but it'd be a bit ironic.
Now we're talking Tasmania.
The man holding the big snapper is a mystery. I asked the guy about that and he said, oh, but there's some women that love a man holding a big fish, you know, because they might be women who enjoy fishing.
Ooh. Well, they're hungry.
Joel Reinberger. Weekdays from 1:30.
Yeah, that's it.
On ABC Northern Tasmania.
Have you ever bought a piece of furniture using imported timber? Then, if so, how can you be confident that the timber has been sustainably harvested?
Australia's really looking now to learn from what other countries have introduced in order to help with identifying legally logged timber coming into the country.
Coming up in the next half hour of the Tasmanian Country Hour, we'll look at a trial that's investigating the use of new technology to determine the species and origins of imported timber. And also, we are going to return to Goatfest.
Once you handle them a lot, they become your best friend. I mean, I sit down in the paddock and just talk and relax, and my mental health is 100% better when I walk out of the paddock.
Great having your company this afternoon, wherever you are in Tasmania, maybe much, much, much further afield on the ABC Listen app. Just a delight spending this afternoon with you. But first, seasonal conditions, well, they've been pretty ideal for farmers growing crops for essential oils such as lavender. Co-owner of Port Arthur Lavender, Brendan Dean, has expanded production too. And with that comes new investment in harvesting equipment. Clancy Barlin dropped into the property to learn more about his latest invention.
So we're working on a new lavender harvester. Currently at the moment, it's done with two people and it's quite an arduous task. So we're trying to alleviate that part of it and go to fully mechanicalised harvesting.
When you say it's an arduous task, can you sort of paint a picture for what it actually looks like regularly?
So regularly we would be two people harvesting for about 2.5 hours, dragging about a 60 to 70 kilo bag of flowers up and down 300 metres of rows. So it does become quite a lot of steps. You get your step count up, that's for sure, for the day. So we're trying to alleviate that. So hopefully within that 2 hours of harvesting, we can probably bring that back to probably 40 minutes of harvesting to harvest the same amount of flowers, which is we harvest about 400 to 500 kilos of flowers most mornings. Then we then take that down to Port Arthur and then distill that for the rest of the day.
How uncommon is it to have a harvester like the one that you're working on at the moment?
Pretty uncommon. There's only two main manufacturers in the world that manufacture harvesters, and they're both based out of Europe, so they're quite expensive to bring in. There's currently only one of those in the state at the moment that's a tractor mounted version.
Now you're working on this by yourself, really, small group of people getting this thing ready to go. Where is it at this stage? How close are we to seeing it out on the field?
We're very close. We've had some field trials with varying success. We're probably only a few days away from having it up and running properly, hopefully. So we're on about Mark 3. We've modified and changed a few things a couple of times. Cutter head wasn't right. We've gone to a different cutter head type. That's fixed that issue. Now we're just into getting the crop lifting part of it right so that it stands the plants up fully and cuts all the flowers off that we can. The season's going really well this year. Like last year, we were very delayed with weather. It pushed everything back about 3 to 4 weeks, and it also knocked our yields, the quality of our yields down. This year, the weather's been great, so therefore our yields have been really well. Almost to the point that some of the earlier stuff we've done, that's nearly doubled their yield, so which is fantastic. But we need to be able to increase that yield, because tourism-wise, it's been fantastic. there's been plenty of people around, and plenty of sales, so therefore you need to have the product to sell.
How has demand been going? Tourists and tourism industry is back.
Yes, it's definitely back. There's no two ways about that. No, it's been really, really good. We had a quiet winter break, but other than that, over the Christmas holiday period, it's been very busy.
And how's local production costs going?
It's definitely gone up, but we just have to readjust where we can and make savings where we can. But then, unfortunately, there is places where we just have to pass that cost on. We can't bear it. So,
have you increased the amount of plants that you've got here in the last few years as well?
Yes, so we're up to about 40,000 plants here on site now. That was up from about 20,000 before. But essentially, we need to iron out these couple of issues with harvesting and distilling, and then we can then basically double our planting, because we're at that point production-wise. We need to expand again.
Brendan Dean from Port Arthur Lavender talking to Clancy Barland. Have you spent much time in the lavender fields over this summer? I know that they have looked very, very impressive. Driving past, seeing some wonderful photos. It's definitely a beautiful sight in Tasmania at this time of the year.
What are the stories I like to hear about?
Food, of course.
People who are inspiring.
Local things and sports. I'm a big fan of sports and ABC Radio. Yeah.
It's amazing. I love it.
The Country Hour with Evan Wallace on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Alistair, thank you very much for your message, listening to our story on the converted silo into accommodation in the Darling Downs. You said, we had silos converted to apartments at Salamanca many years ago. Thank you, Alistair. Thanks for bringing my attention to that one. I wonder how it works and functions for people who call those silos home. Evan Wallace is my name, and if you tuned in to yesterday's Country Hour, then you will know that I am very, very, very excited to relive the joy, the fun of GoatFest 2024. You may have caught my conversation with Don Acklin from the state's northwest on the ins and outs of mohair and the magic of the fluffy Angora goat. I met Don at Sunday's Goat Fest in Longford, and it's the goat industry's annual public field day. It's described as a festival that celebrates everything goats and goat-related. From miniature goats to goat meat, let's head back to the Longford showgrounds and meet a few people who are driving the industry in Tasmania.
I'm Chantelle Lovell. I own Jahanda Miniature Goats, and we're at Bothwell. We raise and breed 100% Oz Minis.
And we're here at Longford's Goat Fest, and we are looking at some very, very cute goats, miniature goats. Now, I've learnt today that they come in all sorts of different varieties and breeds. Yes. What am I looking at right now?
These are 100% Oz miniatures, okay. So no imported genetics at all.
How about that? And how long have you been breeding miniature goats?
Since 2021.
So just a couple of years. Yes. What sparked you getting into the field?
I've always had an interest in miniature goats, and then I had my children, and my last son, kid, was born in 2019, and my husband decided it was time for me to do something I loved. Initially, we were only going to get pets, but three goats turned into a lot of goats in a short amount of time.
It can happen quite quickly, can't it? It does. So you said that they'd always interested you. Tell me about that interest and curiosity and something that really drew you to them.
Well, when I was in high school, I worked on the Bridgewater High School farm. I initially showed cattle, but goats always drew, you know, goats were always a thing for me because they're so versatile and, well, look at them, they're so cute, the colours. And they're just easy for me to handle. And, yeah, it's the cuteness, I think, really won me over initially.
They're so adorable. What about their nature? Are they similar to full-size goats, just a lot of attitude but in a bit of a smaller package?
Definitely. Definitely not like sheep. Each one's got a different personality. Once you handle them a lot, they become your best friend. I mean, I sit down in the paddock and just talk and relax, and my mental health is 100%
better when I walk out of the paddock.
Do you want to feed Teddy?
So Mitchell Doon, we run a small-scale dairy goat at Scottsdale, northeast Tasmania, and we milk a small number of registered dairy goats and run boar goats as well for the meat market. Yeah.
It's a lot on the go, and there is a lot that is happening here today at Goat Fest. But I'm keen to find out a bit more about goat soap and the work that goes into doing it, getting it from milk to the soaps that we're looking at here. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so you freeze the milk because in the process of making the goat soap, you heat the milk heats up because the lye you make with caustic soda and that, which is a cleaning agent, and you got to freeze the milk as you get discolouring in the product. And then we use natural clays and oils, so for sensitive skin people, to make the soap that we make. And it's nothing too extravagant because people do have sensitive skin, which it can react with their skin sort of things, yeah.
How long does it take to put together?
Oh, half an hour probably for a batch. It's a fairly time-consuming product to make, but yeah, it is worth it in the end because, yeah, what it does to people's skins and things like that, yeah.
And I bet it's a good way of really sort of really making sure that these goats that you love and that you connect with, that you know that their milk is really making people's life a lot happier, a lot more joyful.
Oh, sure, for sure. Yeah, no, it's a real passion for us for producing top quality product. What we do on a daily basis is to produce a quality product for people to enjoy, and it's got huge health benefits for so many people. It's just amazing to see what it can do for people. Yeah.
Talk me through some of those health benefits.
Well, eczema. It's goat soap, so we do a milk and honey, which honey is soothing on the skin, which we've had people have huge benefits of using that on their eczema to soothe it and that. And then the goat's milk, well, we haven't got there yet, but goat's milk's got huge benefits for people that are lactose intolerant because of the protein molecules so much smaller, easy to digest, and it's just, yeah, better on their gut and things like that. And yeah.
Okay, my name's Jess and I am half of Jilly Jack Bull Goats. We're based in Penguin. I work quite closely with my daughter Khaleesi to do a lot of the management tasks and things like that. And we breed bull goats for consumption and also for breeding stock.
Today I have talked with people about goat milk. I've talked about goats as pets. I've talked to a few miniature goat pet owners, but I haven't yet talked about goat meat. So tell me, what makes good goat meat?
Good goat meat. So a boar goat, a lot of the goat meat people in Australia would have eaten would have been rangeland meat. So it's not as good a quality as the boar goat meat. The boar goat meat is a much finer meat as farmed goats. So we are looking within our animals for a good meat animal. We are looking for an animal that meets the breed standards, is nice and long, nice and wide, so we can pack as much meat onto that carcass as possible for whoever wants to buy them.
Do enjoy a goat curry. So if we were to use, well, maybe you could say it's potentially a waste if we were using meat from a boar goat for goat curry, but how do you think it might turn out?
Absolutely incredible. We actually, as a family, really enjoy eating goat meat. So they make a fantastic curry. They also make, if you want to put some Greek-inspired sort of herbs and a bit of lemon and things, you put it in the slow cooker, makes an incredible pulled goat shoulder. So you can have that on wraps with tzatziki. The chops from a goat can be fried up just like lamb. And for those who find lamb that little bit fatty and it leaves that sort of taste in your mouth, you don't get that with goat because it is a leaner meat. It can be a bit more palatable that way for people who are not such a fan of the fattiness of lamb.
Tell me a bit more about Jilly Jack.
Well, Jilly Jack, we named the stud for our original three goats. We started with three goats in 2018. Their names were Lily, Jill and Jack. So when we decided to take a step into breeding registered stock, it only made sense to name it after them because they were our gateway goats. So that started it all, basically.
That's not many. How did you decide, okay, this is going to be my life and my world?
We just started looking around and realised there was an enormous market for goat meat within Tasmania, and it was a market that really had gaps within it. There just people didn't seem to be the supply, really, to keep up with that demand. So we thought it seemed like a good avenue for us if we wanted to farm something. They're smaller, so I could do a lot of the work on my own, which is really important. And yeah, it's a growing market, so we can't keep up at this point in time.
What does output look like for you?
We sell most of our stock actually goes as breeding stock. So we sell bucks and does for people who then want to breed their own goats. And we do also sell wethers off. Previously, we've sold them off at weaning for somebody else to grow out. But this year, we're going to actually try growing some out ourselves and have them put through the processing plant and sell them off as meat as either half or whole goat.
How many goats live with you?
We have 75 goats. So we've gone from 3 to 75 in a little over 4 years. Which, a little over 5 years now, sorry. So they are a little bit like Pringles, though. They're very addictive. So you do, and yeah, you think you're going to be fine with three, and trust me, you're never just fine with three.
Jess Viney from Jilly Jack Boar Goats in Penguin, ending our trip to Goat Fest 2024 in Longford.
On ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania, this is the Country Hour with Evan Wallace.
We have been taking a close look at melanoma on this afternoon's Country Hour. Bob, thank you for your message. You've said Evan diagnosed with melanoma in Alice Springs in 1985. It's a place where the sun is very, very strong. Bob, I lived there for a little over a year before moving to Tasmania. But you've said you're still going strong at 75, but now wearing a Legionnaire hat in the garden and a wide brim hat all other times now that you are retired in Launceston. You've also said that you love Goat Fest. Well, Bob, so did I. It was a hoot. It was a lot of fun. I became a little bit confused at times thinking about conversations about a number of kids, a number of children, but it was great. All sorts of goats, all sorts of colours, all varieties, a lot of very passionate people. But if you'd like to chime in and share your experiences and tell me how melanoma has affected your world and the lives of people that revolve around your world, you can. It's not too late to do so. You can text me on 0438 922 936. Maybe in terms of how you have approached sun protection, maybe how you have looked out for your own health.
Leadership changes are deeply traumatizing.
The coalition years.
Friendships are broken. People tell each other lies.
And a story of ambition, betrayal, and revenge.
They just decided to wreck the whole joint.
They destroyed each other's governments.
In a landmark documentary series, the politicians who were there tell what really happened.
Could not make it up.
Nemesis.
Politics is personal.
Continues Monday night on ABC TV and streaming on ABC iView.
And that text line number is 0438 922 936. Great having your company this afternoon. How can you be confident that the timber you've bought has been sustainably harvested without illegally decimating ecosystems in developing countries? A two-year trial of new techniques to combat illegal logging winds up this year, investigating the use of new technology to determine the species and origin of imported timber. Kieran Andrusko is the Federal Department of Agriculture's Director of International Forest Policy.
Illegal logging is a widespread problem. Interpol in 2016 estimated that it costs communities around the world US $50 to $150 billion. And that's including impacts to local communities, to governments from lost revenue, and to others along the supply chain. So it is highly significant. It costs the environment as well. The costs to the environment are estimated to be up to US $900 billion a year. So in terms of social costs and environmental costs, they're right across the board.
And it's not something that can be easily repaired either when you think of those ecosystems.
Certainly, a restoration can be challenging with illegal logging because of the impacts. Illegal logging typically isn't done under the same strict controls that sustainable and legal forestry is. So, of course, you have elements like soil erosion, impacts on the biodiversity that are potentially long-lasting. Illegal logged timber is estimated to represent up to 15 to 30% of global forest products trade, and it has impacts on the prices of sustainable logged timber, depressing prices from 7 to 16%.
Here in Australia, how much of a problem do we have with illegal logging within the country?
Essentially, within Australia, we're not looking at the same sort of scales that we see overseas, which is really where our laws are targeted. There can be isolated cases, which are typically handled under state legislation. This being cases with Sandalwood in Western Australia, for example, successful in recent years. But in terms of worldwide, where we see the biggest illegal logging impacts, it's concentrated in areas where there's still large areas of tropical forest in developing countries, Southeast Asia, Africa, South America. It really comes down to the local communities and the laws in place in those areas.
Is much of this timber actually making it to Australia?
So there was analysis done in 2010, which estimated that up to 10% of timber entering Australia may have been illegally logged. We've commissioned analysis in subsequent years to that, and with the illegal logging laws, we've seen that reduced by a couple of percent. However, that is hard to put a figure on because it does require quite complex tracing back. And to the best of our knowledge, there is still on international markets substantial amounts of illegally logged timber.
From what I've been reading, Australia has been lagging behind countries such as the United States and the European Union in terms of the technologies that we use to identify illegally logged timber. So what's being done to bring us up to speed?
So the Australian government was one of the first internationally to bring in illegal logging laws requiring those checks on supply chains. Australia is really looking now to learn from what other countries have introduced in order to help with identifying legally logged timber coming into the country. We're currently undertaking trials, purchasing retail timber products and sending them off to labs both in Australia and overseas to identify whether or not the products are what they're being claimed to be on shelves. The intent of this is to understand the strengths and weaknesses of the many different timber testing technologies out there at present. And we're trialing a couple of timber testing technologies and approaches right now. So currently we have a up to $4.4 million timber identification budget measure, which is looking to basically sample timber and then test it with laboratories around the world that offer services where they can take a sample of timber, analyze it for its chemical or DNA structure, and then identify where it was logged and what species it was. So this is aimed at improving the traceability of timber. So it gives us the ability as the government to take timber products and see whether or not claims that are being made about them, their origin and their species are accurate, and where they are to work with the importers and retailers that are bringing those into the country that have obligations under our legal logging laws to improve their practices.
And what sorts of advancements have been made with that testing technology?
Testing technologies have come a long way. Within Australia, we have a couple of service providers. We have those offering technologies that involve DNA analysis, which have been used for prosecutions overseas. We also have another entity involved in trace element analysis. And then there's others that are across a wide range of chemical compositions and different approaches, including handheld tools. So those have really substantially increased their coverage in recent years. And the Australian government is looking to support that increase and expand into key timbers coming into Australia with a $1.2 million grant that is to the World Forest ID Consortium, who will add to their collection geo-reference samples from around the Asia Pacific that will enable us to now go to labs and be able to test timber and get a more accurate identification for key species within Australia or coming into Australia.
Have many people been fined for importing illegally logged timber and timber that doesn't meet these requirements of traceability?
So within Australia, we have not fined anyone for importing illegally logged timber. However, there have been fines issued. There are around a dozen fines issued or infringement notices for importing timber without having adequately undertaken due diligence or supply chain checks to ensure that that was not illegally logged.
Kieran Andrusko from the Federal Department of Agriculture speaking with Jennifer Nichols. Hey, Trev, thank you very much for your message. You've said, "Hi, Evan, we've been milking goats for our own use for over 20 years, and I can tell you three is certainly enough. The retired matriarch, the current milker, and the next milker." Joel Reinberger, you are a man of many talents. Have you ever milked a goat?
No, I can't say I have. I've patted a goat and I've run away from a goat, but I've never actually milked one.
Oh, you've run away from one. That sounds like a very interesting story.
I grew up in the country and I ran away from a lot of animals at various times because you just hop a fence and go wandering through to the place you wanted to go, and then there's an animal on that land not being happy with you. And so you run and you leap the fence at the other side and hope it's not barbed wire at the top.
Oh, look out. What's ahead on Afternoons from 1:30?
Now, Evan, I can't see your face from my studio, so I have to ask you this question. Do you have facial hair? here.
Sometimes I do. Today, not really. It's been one or two days since I last shaved, so there's a bit of stubble, but no beard, no moustache, or no goatee to go with the theme of this last half hour.
Well, look, I have grown a beard for the first time in my life.
Oh, congratulations.
In my 50s. Just giving it a go, figuring out see how it looks.
How does it feel?
Itchy and annoying most of the time. People tell me that, you know, it goes from being stubble to hair at some point and becomes much more pleasant. I don't know about that yet, but I am going to keep it going until I'm certain because I just want to see how it looks and I've never done it before. So today on the program, we are doing Beard Care 101.
Love it.
So how do you wash the beard? How do you look after the skin underneath the beard? How does one brush it? How does one generally make the most of one's beard? So we have a hairdresser who is a beard expert to give us the skinny today.
And one of the best things is if you get sick of it, Joel, you could just go up to the barbers and have yourself completely pampered.
Yeah, yeah. Joel, I don't know if barber and pampering goes together, but I'll take that.
Very good. Hey, looking forward to catching you at 1:30. Thanks so much, Joel.
Cheers.
That is Joel Reinberger. You'll hear from him at 1:30. Evan's my name. Meg's in the chair tomorrow. Have a great rest of the afternoon.